Welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. This is Cindy Faye Solomon, your host and producer. Delighted to be with you today on October 28th, if you're in the United States, on a beautiful, brisk morning, Monday morning in California in the Oakland Hills at Studio 132. We're broadcasting live with BZ Lewis, our six-time Emmy-winning sound engineer and musician extraordinaire. Thank you to Blame Sally for the music. You're listening to the Global Product Management Talk, which is a discussion of vital issues, forwarding product excellence, business process, product management, startups, marketing, innovation, and methodology. Weekly, we showcase experts, speakers, bloggers, and thought leaders discussing issues having to do with startups, managing products across seven phases of the product lifecycle, framework, methodology. These discussions originated as the product prod management talk, PRODMGMTTALK Twitter chat, and they spawned the startup product movement for product excellence. So you can follow us at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. That's our Twitter handle, PRODMGMTTALK, and our hashtag, PRODMGMTTALK. You can find out more about us at startupproduct.com. We recently had a three-day event in San Francisco, the Product Bootcamp San Francisco, and our speaker today, Ken Norton, was the moderator and speaker at the Startup Product Summit on October 11th. Let me tell you a bit about Ken. He's a partner at Google Ventures, where he helps lead Startup Lab. Prior to joining Google Ventures, he was a group product manager at Google. He wrote a blog post in 2005 called How to Hire a Product Manager, and it's been viewed by more than a million people, as well as myself several times over the years. At the Product Insight San Francisco conference, he did a tongue-in-cheek presentation about how to work with engineers, and his essay went viral. And I've heard how hysterical it was, but it wasn't caught on film, I don't think. But we did catch Ken Norton speaking on film at the Startup Product Summit, and those videos will be available for purchase very shortly. So we come to you, the Global Product Management Talk comes to you on Mondays, and we are sponsored by the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Management and Marketing. You can find them on the web at www.aipmm.com. They have a great webinar series. They're the certifying body of Agile Certified Product Managers, Certified Product Managers, Certified Product Marketing Managers, Certified Innovation Leaders. If you're looking for certification training to forward your career, check them out, aipmm.com. Thank you to Sprintly. Don't ask how it's going, watch how it's going with sprint.ly. Check them out at sprint.ly on the web and at Sprintly. Project management software, bringing in the entire corporation to the software development process by showing managers and non-engineers a top-level view of what the programmers are doing. And you can get 10% off your first 3 months at Sprintly. Use the code PRODMGMTTALK2013. And also, Startup Product is a movement of community meetups. You can check us out at sfproducttalks.com and, again, on the web at startupproduct.com. So let me tell you a bit more about Ken, and then we'll bring him on. He's going to discuss product management in big companies versus in startups, and also when to hire the first product manager when the founder is a hands-on product lead. He joined Google with the acquisition of JotSpot, where he was vice president of products. Before that, he led product management at Yahoo Search, and back in the day when he was a software engineer, he was one of the first 50 employees of CNET with the founding CTO of Snap, and he was the founding CTO of Snap, which became NBC Internet. He's written extensively about the craft of product management. He's an inventor of 13 patents and a competitive cyclist. He has a BA from BU and an MS from Rensselaer Polytechnic. You can follow him on Twitter at Kenneth N, that's K-E-N-N-E-T-H-N, and I've posted the blog posts that we will be discussing, and by the way, you can follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon, S-O-L-O-M-O-N. Ken, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Thanks for joining me on the show. I'm so excited to have you, and I will say that I did read your blog posts many years ago, so I was just thrilled when you tweeted me, I think it was, telling me that you wanted to be part of the Startup Product Summit, because you certainly made the day.
Good, thank you. It was a great event, and I had a lot of fun.
Awesome. So, where do you want to start? Do you want to give some context? You know what? Let me give a little bit of context. So, you know, on the Global Product Management Talk, we cover everything having to do with product management. So we do have listeners who aren't in software, and we certainly have listeners worldwide who are involved in product management in different industries and different domains. But your focus certainly is in software and technology.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, my background is in software development and web development, but now that I am working at Google Ventures, I actually spend quite a bit of time with companies that, you know, may not look like traditional software development companies. And we have some, you know, for example, life sciences companies in our portfolio. So I get a little bit more of diversity there, but you know, definitely a technology focus.
Excellent. So that's interesting to know that. You know, do we have to sign an NDA for you to talk about who the portfolio companies are?
No, not at all. No, there's, you know, lots of them are companies you know. And, you know, just to give you a little bit of background on Google Ventures, we are a new type of venture fund, started in 2009. We started with $100 million of Google's money that we invest in startups. Now we're over $1.2 billion of management, so we invest about $300 million a year. So we have about, you know, more than 200 companies in the portfolio, you know, at this point. So there are, you know, companies anything from Nest to Foundation Medicine to AngelList to Uber. You know, companies, you know, really run the gamut, mostly in the mobile consumer internet space, commerce, big data, life sciences, and energy.
Wow, and Nest is certainly getting a lot of attention lately.
Yeah, Nest is, they just released their second product line, Nest Protect, which is, you know, a smoke detector and home alarm, and it's just an amazing product. I mean, that team, you know, really at its core has product in their DNA. You know, Tony Fadell, the founder and the early team, you know, came from Apple. And so it's a lot of fun to work with them as, you know, very much a product first company, and certainly if you have a Nest thermostat like I do, and you know, have Nest Protects on order like I do, you've certainly experienced the beauty and elegance of that product, and taking something that, you know, really honestly none of us ever really think about, or certainly didn't think about as a product that we'd be delighted to use. I mean, I've had thermostats in my house for years, and I never said, boy, I wish somebody would reinvent the thermostat, but then they went ahead and did it, and it's just completely changed the way you think about that product category, and they're doing it again.
Yes, yeah, and I think that's the big thing with them is the design of it. It's just, it's lovely. It's inspiring.
It is, and you know, that's you know, so I think something in product management that I've watched and been delighted to watch, and certainly here in my tenure at Google have seen, you know, even here at Google, is really the ascension of design from being almost, you know, in many cases, in particularly kind of engineering-driven companies an afterthought, or something that you would bring in at the end to put a coat of paint on your product is really ascending to be very, very much a core part of how we build products. And certainly at Google, we would think about no product team would be complete if it didn't include product manager, engineering, and user experience designer at the very, very beginning as kind of three legs of that stool, and that's a big change in certainly here in Silicon Valley in the software world over the last 10 years, and certainly a change for the positive as we look at the products that we know and love and use today.
Yes, and I see that as well, and that's actually one of the things that brought about this movement for product excellence, is that it takes a team. It takes more than the developers. It takes the designers, the UX people, the even marketing, some people would say, at the very inception of the product. But it takes a team to arrive at what you want to call product excellence. But and I think that Nest is yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's very much what product management is recognizing, who are the important contributors from the team that need to be there. How are they going to be effective to contribute? Are they being heard? Are they a part of the process? And I think a lot of what product management is making sure that you have the right folks at the table. And if you don't, going and making sure you get them.
Right, which brings up the point that who are the right people at the table is going to be different at the inception of the product and certainly at the beginning of a startup than who needs to be at the table to scale once you get product market fit.
I think that's right. And, and certainly it's going to vary depending on the product. I mean, we have companies in our portfolio like Foundation Medicine, which does kind of genetic cancer research, and the early founding team at a company that does cancer research is going to be very different than the company that does a mobile game app. But I think that you have to have a leader of that team, and in many cases in a startup, that's one of the founders or more than one of the founders, who is the product leader, who's the product founder, and so if you look at very successful companies that have strong product founders, those people have maintained an engagement and continue to kind of own the product as the company has grown. I mean, here at Google, Larry Page and Sergey as his co-founder, very much product-focused founders and CEOs. Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook, Steve Jobs at Apple. And having that in your DNA, I think from the very beginning, and ensuring that as the company grows, that product mentality, that product philosophy stays very much a part of what the company is all about, is critical. And we've watched lots of companies fail that had that in the beginning and then, weren't able to overcome the growth or lost control of the product or lost focus, or the product leader left the company and someone else didn't kind of pick up the helm.
Sure. And you're talking about more than the visionary. I mean, certainly those product people are visionaries, but they also had the ability to implement to achieve their vision.
That's right, and the vision is one thing, and it's critically important. The idea, the understanding of what the company is all about, but ideas, they don't get you very far if you don't have strong executors. And I think if you look at very outstanding product CEOs, like Larry Page or Mark Zuckerberg, they're people that both, have this just fantastic vision for where the world is going, combined with an impatience about how long it's taking to get there. The sense that let's keep moving, let's execute, what are we doing, how are we getting there? Not just, I have this amazing dream and this is what it looks like, but also the ability to continue to keep a team executing. And I think, I've seen this in, lots of founders that I've had the opportunity to work under, people that I've worked with in the portfolio, it's almost this kind of combination of fantastic vision and incredible impatience. That they see this this place that we all want to get to, and they want to get there very fast, and they want to make sure that the team is moving, and it doesn't mean just moving fast. It means, making progress and learning and evolving.
Excellent. Hey, I want to just give a shout out to some of our tweeters. Hi, Roger Coven, who's been on the show. He's a PM out of Austin. Hi, Martin Erickson is listening also. Hey, Josh Oman. Wow. Tarek Kreck, Alicia Dixon, okay, John Peltier, Teresa Torres, Bruce McCarthy. Wow, all of our great listeners. We have quite a lot of Twitter followers today, so that's great. Okay, so maybe we should jump in. Well, we're kind of circling some of the questions that we plan to discuss, but let's be official. Since we have a Q1, I'm going to post it out to our Twitter. So what's it like moving into venture capital from an operational product management role?
Very good question. So just to kind of give a little bit of background around how I got to where I am today at Google. So I've been at Google for I think 7 years today or within the next couple of days since I joined Google, and moved over to Google Ventures about 9 months ago from hands-on product roles. And the reason that I decided to do that was I had been at Google for worked on essentially three large projects that were averaged about 2 years each, which I think is pretty typical for PMs at Google. And I wanted to get back to my startup DNA. I came in to Google from a startup. I like to say, even though I've worked at big companies like Google and Yahoo, I don't think I'd ever joined a company that was more than 100 people. I just, either got acquired or kind of watched them grow. And so always kind of at my heart have been a startup person. And wanted to kind of get back into startups, but yet I didn't want to leave Google. And that's kind of a weird thing to say, is that I want to be at a startup, but I don't want to leave Google. But when you're at a company like Google and it's just an incredibly, fulfilling and amazing place, it's just, you want to continue to be a part of this. And so I began to talk to the folks over at Google Ventures and some of whom I'd known for many, many years, before Google. And, I realized that I wanted to work with startups, but I wasn't sure I wanted to be an investor. I wasn't sure whether that, looking at pitches and making investments and sitting on board of directors was really, something that I would enjoy or be good at. But fortunately, GDV is a very different type of fund, and we in many ways the folks who started Google Ventures kind of turned venture capital upside down, and they said, look, there's a tremendous amount of things that we can do to bring to a company to allow them to move faster. And they're all the things that we wish we'd had when we were at startups, and many of us who'd been at startups who came to Google, help with, user experience design, for example, helping to scale your operations by tapping into these, 50,000 Googlers that we have that are experts in all these different topics. And So Google Ventures has something we should call the Startup Lab, which is really about doing that. So, working with the 200 portfolio companies to basically help them achieve market fit, help them scale, help them grow, help them be successful, and, ultimately, of course, help them be successful so that Google makes money, because we're investors and that's what we're all about. I'm not in an operational role, so I'm not a product manager, hands-on product manager anymore. But I'm spending most of my time working with folks in the portfolio who are product managers, and so that's anything from a combination of coaching to workshops that we put on to help bring experts and various different topics to all the employees of a portfolio company. So it's definitely an adjustment from being a product manager, but I would also not say I'm a venture capitalist, because I'm not on the investment side. So I have the good fortune to kind of continue to work with hands-on product problems. Now, of course, they're not my problems. I'm not the product manager for those companies, and I can help, but ultimately those teams are the ones that are going to be able to do it. So I enjoy it an incredible amount. I think it's been just so much fun, and it's the quality of the people that I have the opportunity to work with, the diversity of problems, is incredibly enjoyable. I mean, to be able to work with companies like, Nest and Uber and AngelList, and I mean, just all sorts of damn different interesting problems with amazing teams. It's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. Wow. So, let's see. We had a question for you. Let me check out. They might have just been echoing that question. Where was it? Can you talk about... Nils Davis.
Yes, that's the one. I see it. Yeah.
So, hi, Nils. So he asked, can you talk about joining a company that's led by a founder, a product person?
Great question. This is something that I have a lot of experience with on both sides, both being the first product person to join a company and actually this being a question and a topic that comes up a lot with our portfolio companies. And so I think the question being that, you know, obviously most great companies are led by, you know, somebody who's playing that product role, right? I mean, there's, you know, when you're not hiring the first product person from outside the company. I mean, the product person is there. They're the founder, they're the CEO, you know, maybe they're the CTO, but there's somebody who really fundamentally owns the product and owns the product direction who's running the company. And so I think there's a couple of different challenges there that I could talk about. One, both from the point of view of the founders, and when and how do you decide it's time, and then also from the point of view of being one. So from the point of view of the founders, it's a tough decision, and the decision is usually more of when is the right time. So I spend a lot of time with our CEOs and trying to help them think, you know, at what point is it right to bring in somebody to really kind of take on this role. And one of my partners here at Google, who also happened to be founder and CEO of JotSpot, he wrote this great blog post called First Fire Thyself, which you can find actually linked to from the Google Ventures website, which is from the point of view of a CEO, you know, you're basically doing everybody's job. And at some point, you need to kind of go across all these different things you're doing, everything from marketing to sales to product, and fire yourself by bringing in somebody who's going to ultimately take that on. And so that's a challenge for the founder CEO to both kind of hand off and let go, but it's also a challenge to know when is the right time to do it. And so what I tell a lot of our CEOs and founders is, you know, the team will tell you when it's time. And what I mean by that is, you know, you'll start to recognize when you're a product-focused founder and CEO that you are holding the team up, right? When the engineering team starts coming to you and saying, you know, we need a decision on this, or you need to help us kind of look at these and review these screens, but you've been too busy out in the field with the sales group, or you've been working on marketing, you've been interviewing, you know, you're holding us up. And so I think that is a good time to realize that, wait a minute, I need to bring in somebody who's gonna be the product lead, who's gonna be the VP of product or senior product person or whatever the title is gonna be, who's gonna take that job on. And you know, you don't want to do it too early, because I think if you do it too early, you're handing off a lot of the ownership of the product when, you know, it's most depended on by the rest of the team to kind of build that DNA in the company. And it's also usually an opportunity cost, which is, you know, I could have hired another engineer, we could have hired a designer, but now I hired a PM, and, you know, that's an opportunity cost for that. But you know, your team will be telling you, and they may be telling you with increasing urgency as it goes on longer and longer. And now from the point of view, okay, what's it like to come in? You know, I've experienced that. I mean, that's I joined JotSpot. We were about 10 people. You know, Joe very much is a product person, was the product lead. And so, you know, he essentially fired himself from that product role to bring me in. And so certainly the relationship between those two people is absolutely critical. You know, ensuring that you're both, you share that product vision, you know, making sure that you're thinking very deeply about the problems that the company's been thinking about. You know, if that relationship goes awry, it's not going to work fundamentally. And so I think that's critically important, that if you're thinking about joining an early stage company as that kind of first product person, that, you know, you have a really excellent working relationship with the founder and the CEO or whomever is handing that off to you. And then I think it's just, you know, being very patient. And this is good advice for anybody that moves into a PM role in any team is, you know, you're going to have a lot of ideas. You're going to have a lot of opinions. Don't be afraid to share those ideas and opinions, but make sure you've absorbed everything that you can at first, right? So if you walk in and you start breaking things, you're going to frustrate people. People are going to roll their eyes when they say, well, that's exactly the opposite of what we were trying to do. Let me explain why. And so I think coming in and showing that you're eager to listen, you want to learn, you know, that you want to kind of absorb what the team is all about and the problems. And then, you know, I think just picking up a lot of rubbish, right? I mean, you know, saying, great, I'll take over the bug queue, and, you know, what is the engineering lead doing that, you know, rightly should be the PM's job? Great, let me take that on. You know, who's making the Costco run? I'll do that. You know, who's bringing the donuts? I'll bring those. You know, just starting to show that really you're capable of uplifting the entire team, you know, by taking on a lot of stuff that really everybody else has been doing, right? I mean, there's been a lot of what's traditionally PM work that has been sprinkled around the company because that person hasn't existed. And so I think very quickly people will ask themselves, you know, okay, we're a tiny company. We just had this person join. You know, is my life better or worse now that they've joined? And the first thing they're going to ask themselves is my life better or worse? And if they answer it's worse, then you're going to have a hard time. But fortunately, it's very easy to help them realize that their life is going to be a lot better with you in the seat. And, you know, certainly being able to get quick decisions and quick feedback and, you know, whatever, you know, busy work they had been doing that you can take over is going to help them along as well.
Excellent. So a couple of points. Read what Roger Coven is tweeting, because this is something that we discuss on the Global Product Management Talk a lot. So he's interested in knowing whether you see product management as a more inward-facing role or a more strategic and market-facing, because that's one of the issues that we get into trouble with in technology-driven companies, which are most of the ones here in Silicon Valley, that most people these days see product management primarily as inward-facing, working with developers and having the title of product owner, which I see that as a subset of what the entire product management challenge is.
Good question. And, you know, I would say that, you know, in years gone past in Silicon Valley, we would say, you know, there's an inbound product role and an outbound product role, right? Inbound is very much focused on, you know, shipping the product, and outbound is, you know, what is the right product to ship, understanding the market fit, and you know, you can't separate those, right? I mean, you know, you can't have one person who's just working with the engineering team to ship something and somebody else who's out there talking about it, marketing it, and meeting, you know, with customers to find out what they want. I mean, that's just ludicrous. So I think that sense that there's some sort of binary separation, I think, was never really practical. You know, that said, I think that, you know, the product manager role that I've occupied and have kind of worked closely with, you know, in technology is, you know, much more working on shipping the right product than you know, marketing it or spending time, you know, outbound. So there's a good kind of combination there. But, you know, I would, you know, at Google certainly, I would feel like if I wasn't spending, you know, let's say, two-thirds of my time with my engineering team, you know, my product team, people who are building, you know, that would include designers and whomever was actually doing the building, then I was drifting. You know, if I wasn't spending, you know, two-thirds of my time hands-on with the product team building product, then I was losing touch. By the same token, if I wasn't spending, you know, let's figure, you know, 20% of my time, or, you know, being in touch with the market, the end users, in support forums, meeting with customers, then I was drifting in the opposite direction. So, you know, that ratio was right for me in that type of role, and it may be different, you know, for different companies. But, you know, I would say that the product manager role is both. I mean, it's both. And if you, you know, are kind of in a position where there's somebody whose job it is to understand the market and your job is to build it, or vice versa, then I would think very deeply around whether you have the right organization set up.
I think that the difficulty is, and certainly, you know, my focus has been on the other side, on product marketing, which is rarely discussed as a separate position unto itself. It's very difficult to have deep skills on both sides. In doing everything that needs to be done to get the product out there and to guarantee the product market fit and to scale identify the competitive space, and all of the things required in guaranteeing that that product is going to be successful is a whole other skill set to working directly with the engineers and identifying the right requirements and feature prioritization and everything else.
It is. I mean, and that's part of why product management is so hard. I mean, it's a lot of, you know, kind of diverse skills that often aren't found together. And that said, that doesn't mean that you may not be stronger in one area or weaker in another or lean one direction or another direction. I mean, there's companies that may be much more marketing driven, where that formula I gave may be completely reversed. But my point is that it's not somebody else's job to understand the market and your job to build a product, or somebody else's job to build it and for you to understand the customer. I mean, it's your job to do both. And you may rely very heavily on other people who are better at it, who spend more of their time doing that. Here at Google, we have product marketing managers that we work very closely with, and their kind of ratio might be flipped. So, they are going to spend much, much more time, with that outbound role. But it doesn't mean that it's their job and not mine.
Excellent. So, okay, so Alicia Dixon says she was wondering how long it would take before you mentioned the donuts, and and we do have a question which I tweeted out earlier because we're not going in order, which is totally fine, but you like to say that PM should bring the donuts. So what exactly do you mean by that? And I think you spoke to it a bit.
First off, hi Alicia. the donut thing is funny. So it came actually from a talk that I did, probably 8 or 9 years ago, where I was asked to speak at I think it was a Silicon Valley Product Management Association kind of monthly meeting. And they asked me to, from the point of view of a PM, how do you work with all the different functions in the company? And so it was like, how do you work with engineering? How do you work with sales? How do you work with marketing? And I had kind of a list of different things that you might want to do differently, or different ways that you could kind of empathize with those different groups. And I was trying to think of something that captured this notion that, a product manager in a lot of ways is just, you got to be willing to roll up your sleeves and be the janitor, right? You got to be willing to do the grungy work to make other people productive, to make other people, able to better focus on what it is that they do well. And I was thinking about what is that I've always done? And I was like, I was kind of always the one that would go get the donuts for the meeting or the bagels or whatever. And you're like, if you're a PM and you're unwilling to be the one to get the donuts for the meeting, then you're not properly thinking about your role, right? Which is, that's what you do, right? You bring the donuts. You do what needs getting done. And no job is too small for you because, that's part of the function you play in the organization. So I kind of went through, here are the different functions and, here's how to work with engineering. And the last bullet point was, bring the donuts, for all of them. And I think that resonated with a lot of people because, great PMs, maybe you don't bring donuts or maybe you bring bagels or who knows, but, you have that sense of, you got to be willing to roll up your sleeves and do the work that's not sexy, that's not exciting, that's going to allow your team to be, productive. And for me, that's always been donuts, and that's kind of, taken on a life of its own. But the deep dark secret is I actually don't really eat donuts very often. I'm not actually a huge donut fan, which is I can start getting the word out there because people always kind of bring donuts to me when I meet. I will eat donuts, but they're not my favorite.
Okay. So basically, you're bringing the donuts. Raja says for him it's a metaphor for the product manager as enables the product team. For me, it's indicative that the product manager needs to see what's missing to fill that in, to bring in the right people, and to do whatever it takes to be resourceful, creative, but thinking outside you know, the Kool-Aid, but thinking beyond what everyone else is already aligned with. So whether that's bringing donuts or gluten-free bagels or, to your point, whatever it takes to get people talking to each other and to grease the wheels to get that product out the door, ideally on time, within budget, but with proper positioning as well.
That's right. And, you know, I mean, to your point around doing what other people, I mean, you know, if you don't bring the donuts, you're probably going to show up to the meeting and everybody's going to be like, did anybody bring anything to eat, right? I mean, because PMs have this, you know, important essential role to play to look for the cracks and look for the holes and, you know, understand where there may be two teams that aren't properly communicating with each other, something that's not getting done, you know, something that's being, you know, thought through by the wrong team or, you know, a sales team that hasn't been properly prepped on the product pipeline, a support team that doesn't know there's a new feature launching tomorrow. I mean, you know, you're in this position where you will see the things that no one else is going to see because they're not in the position to see them. They don't sit in the middle like you do. They weren't in a customer meeting yesterday and with engineering today. And, you know, I like to use – people talk about PMs as a kind of mini CEO. That's not been my favorite analogy. I mean, I like an orchestra conductor better as an analogy for that, which is, you know, if the PM's not there, people are still going to go ahead and do their job. You know, you can go see an orchestra, 100-piece orchestra play without a conductor, right? All these people are incredibly skilled musicians. You know, they're wonderful at what they do. But after a little while, the sound's going to drift, and you know, somebody's going to miss a note, or it's going to sound kind of out of sync. And so, you know, that the PM is in many ways like the orchestra conductor to kind of be able to see across everything that's getting done and making sure the strings are ready to go and, you know, the percussion is lined up and that the team kind of gels together. But really the performers are the musicians, right? I mean, the orchestra conductor may be a talented musician in his or her own right, but the music is coming from the orchestra. And honestly, if that conductor wasn't there, they'd still be playing. They probably just wouldn't be as great at what they do.
Right. And they'd be focused on playing great music. They'd be focused on being the best at their instrument and not necessarily gelling with the entire sound of everyone else.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, if your most brilliant engineer is like the first violin, I mean, you want the first violinist to be playing the violin and doing what they do well, and not worrying about, you know, where the chair is going to be or what the percussionist is doing, or, you know, that you want to give people the opportunity to excel and to focus on what it is that they're great at. And I think that's part of why I love being a product manager, is because I've been surrounded by all these people that are just so much smarter than me and so much better at what they do. And I'm just, you know, helping them not have to worry about the things that are going to prevent them from being great. And hopefully together we're all better than we would have been, you know, apart.
So there's a general consensus on Twitter that no one actually eats donuts. Maybe we really don't want to feed donuts to the developer team. we should find better brain food. So.
Yeah, I don't know. The sugar crash is you know, maybe something that we want to avoid.
But yeah, no, everyone resonates with the orchestra conductor, and that is an entire, there's certainly a lot of blog posts that have been written about the CEO of the product debate. I think that, you know, it's probably a good title because it incites a lot of people to read it in anger, but but definitely, in to your point about identifying, you know, who the smartest people are in the room, it's really what the whole intention of the Global Product Management Talk and even the startup product in showcasing the right people, the smart people, and even modeling for people coming in or choosing. People are actually choosing to be product managers these days of who to follow and who to listen to and how to get people to talk to each other.
Yeah, and that's something that I absolutely love, and I love that with the portfolios companies that we work with. I love that with you know, the startup product conference, where, you know, product management has really come into its own to a point where people are actually saying, this is what I want to do. This is what I want my career to be. You know, I had to kind of stumble into it, right? Because it just, you know, it was one of these things that just was so ill-defined and it wasn't really kind of obvious. And I had to kind of fail at everything else and then land in product management to realize that's where I really belonged. But, you know, I love that I talk to undergraduates who say, you know, I want to be a product manager. You know, how do I develop my skills? I love that, you know, Google, for example, has the Associate Product Manager program where we hire people right out of college and help them become product managers. I love that it is something now that has become well understood and there's a shared vocabulary enough that we can say, I'm a product manager, and people go, I know what that means. You know, whereas, you know, 10 years ago, you'd be like, what is that, you know, you're a product manager, is that the, and that's the person at Procter & Gamble who decides what color the laundry detergent box is. You're like, no, this is a software thing. And you're like, oh, okay, you're a marketing person. No, I work with engineering. Oh, you're a project manager. But now I think we have this, certainly in the technology industry, we have a shared vocabulary, and we say, you know, product manager, and people can understand what that means and want to aspire to it, and I think that's great.
Yes, I certainly see that as well as a new wave of this emerging, quote-unquote, profession, that people are choosing to be it. And so, they'll get a computer science degree and then they'll get an MBA, neither of which really equip them to be product manager.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, and it's part of it is because it's so experiential. I mean, it's much more of a, you know, the type of, you know, craft that you know, it's like, well, what do we want out of a product manager? Well, they have to have had led teams and, you know, shipped something. Well, you can't really have led a team and ship something unless you've been a product manager. But it's like, well, if I only hire people who have led teams and shipped something, then I'm never, you know, you have this kind of catch-22. You know, so it's I think it's much more of an apprenticeship type thing where you need to have the right skills. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, I've written about this extensively, but, you know, you need to be technical enough. Okay, well, you know, having a CS degree certainly makes you technical enough. You know, you need to be able to think about how the business is. Okay, well, having an MBA helps with that. But those just kind of help with the background, but they don't help you with the actual learning of how to do the job. And so I think that's why a lot of these, you know, programs like the APM program at Google and, you know, Facebook has similar types of programming that helps, because it says we're going to hire the people that have the raw skills who have all this promise, and we're going to give them the opportunity to ship stuff. And startups are great for that too. I mean, you know, I decided to switch over to product management at a startup because I decided that, you know, if part of it was I wasn't sure whether I wanted to leave engineering. So I said, okay, well, if it doesn't work out, I could always just say, you know, I was in an engineering focused role, and you know, I could call it product management if I think it works out. It's really what I want to do, because you know, startups are so malleable, where everybody does a little bit of everything. Everybody has to wear lots of different hats. You know, it gives you that opportunity to try it out and to, you know, be in a position that, you know, a big company, you know, may not have put you in because you don't necessarily have that experience on your resume. Whereas you're a tiny startup, you know, you could jump right in and say, you know, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna help ship this product. I'm gonna take the lead on this.
Yeah. So for Roger Coven says that he thinks it needs talents more than skills combined with the APM program. And he posted in August he actually wrote about the talents of great product managers. And that's
excellent. Yeah.
That's another theme that runs through the product management blogosphere, is that domain expertise is less important than seasoned product management experience. Although that's not usually what is on a job requirements position.
Yeah, I think that's right. I would cautiously agree with that. I would say, you know, having had the opportunity to get to know product managers at companies that are doing things very differently than I've. I mean, I was last week spending some time with some PMs at a company we in our portfolio. portfolio called Flatiron, which is in the medical space, and that PM job at that company, which is in medical, has a lot more in common with being a PM at a consumer software company than jobs at any other kind of medical company. And so I think there's a lot more in common with it than you might think. And I would agree that domain expertise is probably over-exaggerated, and certainly, hiring somebody who may be a great domain expert but hasn't shipped product is going to be a mistake. But that said, if you don't have the understanding of that marketplace, of those users, of that technical challenge, if the engineering team flips the bid on you because they think you have no idea what they're talking about because you just don't get, you don't come from that world, you don't understand it, then you're not going to succeed as well. So I think they're both important. But I do agree, given a choice between, somebody who has shown a demonstrated track record of shipping products, leading teams, getting stuff done, in an area that may be a different domain expert versus, somebody who is a great domain expert in that area but hasn't led and shipped, I would certainly pick the person with the experience shipping product.
And I don't think anyone says you don't need any domain expertise. You couldn't go into that interview without having prepped and being able to speak about, or you shouldn't be even considered for that position. But to your point that you can apply skills from one, you can jump the learning curve to get domain expertise. It's just harder to jump that curve without any product management experience or any direct experience on a product team shipping product.
I think that's right. You have to be willing to learn. I mean, I think that, PMs that just aren't willing to learn anymore are not going to do well. I mean, it's just... You have to be willing to ask questions. You have to be willing to look stupid. I mean, I think that's a lot of what PM is just being willing to look stupid, right? Raise your hand and be like, okay, I have no idea what you guys are talking about, right? Slow down. I want to make sure I understand it. Please help me understand. And I think, if you are, too bullheaded to either want to show that you don't learn or not to care to learn, then I think you're not successful. And that's an attribute of great entrepreneurs. Too. I mean, I think about, entrepreneurs I've worked for, hugely successful, billionaires who and they're still like, they want to learn, right? They want to soak up all the information and they want to learn something from you. And you're like, for everything I can teach you, you could teach me 1,000, but okay, here's what I've learned. Because they want to soak up information and knowledge and better understand it. And so I think as a PM, whether you have that deep domain knowledge at all, there's always more room to learn, and you need to be willing to learn, you need to be eager to learn. And so, there are plenty of examples of people who don't know anything about their market, who jump in, identified a problem and solved it and were hugely successful without any domain expertise. In fact, one could argue that, you look at Nest, right? I mean, if they, with a whole bunch of founders who had done nothing but build thermostats for 40 years, like they probably wouldn't have been as disruptive as they are. It probably wouldn't be an amazing product because they didn't come from that domain expert. But you better learn, you better believe they've learned a ton about thermostats at that time frame. And so I think that, they're both important, but if anything, your ability to understand that market fit, what problems you're solving, deeply and intimately, and then understand what technology is being built to support that is what's most important.
For sure. So, let's see. Okay, so acquisitive and emergent learning is a fundamentally important talent, and it's number one on Roger's list. By the way, Roger Coven is also a prolific blogger about product management issues. He's at rcoven. And Alicia Dixon resonates with, to be a good PM, you have to be willing to look stupid and you must be willing to learn. And I think this is an issue for women. And I realize that I need to talk more about it. For me, it's just a given. But women don't want to look stupid because we're always having to prove we're as smart as the guys in the room. I've reached, a point beyond that I don't care. I'm more interested in learning something than worrying about what anyone thinks of what I know, because certainly I never know as much as everyone else in the room, and that's what makes it exciting for me.
Well, I think that's good. It's great you bring that up, and I think also the ways in which people prove they're smart often tend to be, being the loudest, right? And, you know, standing up and throwing their hands up, and so I think it's to your point. You know, I think women, are challenged to want to be in a position where they're not looking stupid, but I think also more importantly, it's the ways you prove you're smart are often things that loud men tend to do. I was out in Boston this past week working with our portfolio companies, but it was also my 20th year reunion at Boston University, and I went to a dinner where I sat next to a prominent member of the computer science department, and he was talking about how differently women and men performed both in the classroom and then online. And one of the things that he was most excited about was more of the learning moving online, so more of the discussion, more of the forums, more of the interaction happening online was a lot more participation for women in that environment, right? Because, in the classroom, a lot of times, you have people who, throw up their hands and speak a lot and talk a lot or tend to be the loudest and tend to maybe be people that are programming for the longest and tend to be men. But that's not the case online. And so he's watching that kind of change the dynamic, both of giving women a platform to be more participative, but also for all the guys in the class to look around and realize, the women in the classroom really know their stuff. and so it's interesting the kind of different learning and changing models and how much that supports that.
Yes, I find that to be true, that women certainly know a lot, but they're much more humble and much more cautious in putting it out there how much they know. Because also, hey, we don't want guys to feel bad, or at least that, my generation was... It was important that, part of our role was to make the guys feel smart, but that doesn't serve us. And also to the point, look, women used to type faster and be text-based. I certainly think, why I enjoy Twitter is because I like reading the text. I like seeing many people just talking at once, and it's all... It's only about the content. It's only about the information.
Yeah, it's funny too in programming, because programming started as predominantly a female job, woman led job. I mean, it changed over the years. But I think this is an area where Silicon Valley in particular, and I think all industries, but Silicon Valley in particular, has a tremendous blind spot around diversity. And I think that is, one of the things that's made us strongest over the years is the sense that we're a meritocracy. But and that has been wonderful, but it's actually one of the areas that's giving us a huge blind spot when we think about, the types of people we're hiring and how we're surrounding ourselves and how we're giving voice to people who don't have voice, is because we think that we're just a meritocracy. And everything's going to sort its way out, and meanwhile, there are not enough women in leadership positions. There are not enough member minorities in leadership positions, and it's not going to change unless we all recognize it's a problem and we work to change it. And so I'm proud to work at Google where I feel like we've been leaders on this, and even though there's a lot more we all need to do, but I think product managers have a special opportunity to lead here, because we're often in positions where our voices are heard by leadership, where we influence hiring across the board, so not just in our own kind of vertical, but kind of across the company. And so I think that we as product managers, as kind of leaders of these product teams, have a great responsibility and great opportunity to step up and say, we need more diversity. And we need diversity both because that's going to help us build better products, but because guess what? Our user base is very diverse. I mean, we think about Google. I mean, who are our users? Well, there are billions of people around the world. What do they look like? They look like everybody. Where do they live? How do they interact with the world? And if our product team only looks like one small particular slice of that, how are we going to successfully build products for the entire world? So the more, our team looks like the world, the better we're going to be at solving their problems and building products that are great for them.
Thank you. It's more than 20 years that I'm in technology, and I've been waiting to hear this conversation, or waiting, you know, and it's almost like it's taken a new generation to recognize this. But certainly, you know, who is buying the products, who are using the products, not only on mobile but across the board, are diverse people outside of Ivy League schools and certainly outside of Silicon Valley. So thank you. Geesh, we're coming to the end of the hour, Ken. It always flies by fast. We only got to a couple of questions. There's a lot of more questions coming in on Twitter. So I will say that if people want to continue the conversation, you can tweet directly to Kenneth at KENNETHN. I think I've been tweeting out the wrong bit.ly for this Blog Talk Radio session. So if you just go to blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK, you will see the archive. You'll be able to listen on demand. And you also see that we have new shows coming up weekly with Brain Rants from Brainmates Down Under, discussing product management outside of Silicon Valley from a Sydney, Australia perspective, and they're talking about specifics about product management methodology and approaches and perspectives. So very excited about, it's just a 15-minute show, and if you follow at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK, you'll get pinged with those new shows coming up. Ken, any last words that you'd like to say before you go on to your lunch with the Wall Street Journal?
This has been a lot of fun and really enjoyed the conversation. I guess I would just echo what Cindy said, which is I'll keep the conversation going on Twitter. I'm very active on Twitter, maybe borderline too active, but you can always find me on Twitter at Kenneth N. And I think this, the response and just kind of the enthusiasm we have just speaks to just this kind of incredible pent-up demand we have as product people to want to learn from each other and talk to each other. And, it can sometimes be a very lonely job in that you don't really, in your day-to-day job, get to talk with a lot of product managers. I mean, you're with everybody else. And so look for more opportunities to do this. And thank you so much, Cindy, for all you've done for the profession, for the industry, and for bringing me on today.
Thank you, Ken. And let's do this again. The next place to go is a webcast. So always planting seeds for new opportunities. And I also do want to underline that you mentioned apprenticeship in product management, and that's really something that I'm looking at on the roadmap for the startup product movement, and something that was discussed on Saturday at Product Camp San Francisco, October 12th, by April McKay. She led a session on apprenticeship, and by the way, she's recently gotten hired by Innovation Games with Luke Coleman as a result of her involvement with Product Bootcamp, so I'm very proud of her. And definitely it's an issue, apprenticeship, that I'd like to pursue further. Thank you so much, Kenneth, for being with us today. Very excited to have people be able to see your talk from the Startup Product Summit, which will be available when the videos are released. And you can follow Ken again at Kenneth N on Twitter and on his website at kennethnorton.com, where his essays about product management and how to work with software engineers are also available. So thanks
great.
Again.
Thanks well, thank
again.
You very much.
Ken, have a great week. Thank you to our tweeters. I'll capture the transcript into a Storify. You'll be able to read it at storify.com/PRODMGMTTALK. Thanks so much, BZ Lewis, Studio 132, and Blame Sally will take us out with the music. Have a great week.
and a porcupine, feeding to get out of Valentine. On a dry winter leaf, I wouldn't know love.